Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Monday, everybody. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell, coming to you live from the thriving metropolis of Columbiaville, where at least at present you can't drink the water, but whatever. Beer's got water in it, so that's fine.
Yeah.
You hadn't heard. I'm sure, you know, it's entirely possible. Eric or Catherine covered it on the news today at some point, but here in the thriving metropolis of Columbiaville, we're still under a boil water advisory until basically until further notice. I did speak with somebody with the township, Marathon Township, today, who said that they've sent an additional sample of the water out to Owosso for testing, so we should know tomorrow afternoon if the water is free and clear. They did add a bunch more chlorine to it after, I guess they had one of the well pumps here fail, and ended up coming back for, not for E. coli necessarily, but I guess a bacteria that can be an indicator of potential E. coli in the drinking supply. So that's a thing we're still kind of dealing with around here. That is still in effect at the moment. If we have anyone else tuning in, probably streaming, I would imagine, around the Columbiaville area, that is all still going on. Now, we do have a lot of, it's all sports the rest of the way. It's all pretty much going to be Lions, by and large, NFL football in general. I feel like we have to lead off with your Detroit Football Lions today.
I didn't get a chance to check out the game, but because I went to bed early, but apparently I missed a good fourth quarter.
You certainly did. My, this team, it wasn't good for the first, like, half of the game.
Five interceptions for Jared Goff.
Yeah, you hate to see that. Like, it's really, quite frankly, it says something about you. There were two things here that really stood out to me. One being, you threw five picks and still won the game. But the other being that you have finally arrived as a legitimate team to be taken seriously, in that you played so well last night, particularly defensively. You played so well that you had the refs give you a free call on the what should have been a pass interference that would have set the Texans up with the possibility to score a touchdown in regulation and basically end this thing. And crazier yet is that it was on, or would have been, on Carlton Davis, who has kind of had a history, certainly this season, of being on the wrong side of those calls. But instead, you end up going and getting the ball back, getting down, forcing Houston to settle for what would have been like a 58-yard field goal attempt, which they would not convert on, and then coming back down and having Jake Bates do his thing. And, oh, don't worry, it is, since, you know, it is the Monday show here, I do have audio. I've got all the audio you could possibly want. Maybe we'll skip some of the less fun stuff from the first half of the game, though I will give you a couple things that set up the Lions' first score of the game. First off, Jameson Williams. While at times the chemistry just wasn't there, like him and Goff weren't quite reading each other, and in fact, Dan Campbell post-game would say that one particular missed pass to J-Mo was on J-Mo for not being in the right place at quite the right time. He'd gone too far towards the outside and ultimately missed. I will say that they had some nice moments like this one.
Goff from out of the gun. There's the snap. Jared back and looking, throwing deep middle. It is caught. Bobbled and then caught out there by Jameson Williams across the 45 and out to the 47-yard line. J-Mo that time, it hit him in the hands. Wasn't too secure. It popped up. Then he grabbed it, hauled it in, and that's a 23-yard gain.
Then in the next quarter, Sam Laporta goes and makes his presence known.
There's the snap. Goff fakes the give. Rolls to his right. Looks, throws. End zone. Got a man. Yep. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Sam Laporta. Hard run, fake, Goff boots to the right, looks up, 87's running alone, and he found him.
But like I said, standout day for the defense, particularly the aforementioned Carlton Davis, who had him a game.
There's the snap, Stroud wants to throw, does. It is picked off by the Lions, intercepted. Picked off that time by Carlton Davis, who broke on that football, and that's exactly what the Lions needed. They will take over inside the Texan 30-yard line. Jared takes the snap, hands to Demo, left side, end zone touchdown, Detroit Lions. Jared Goff hands to Montgomery. He takes it home, and the Lions are going to leave the offense out there and go for two.
I was sitting there watching at the game last night and thinking, like, all right, you just got a nice, massive chunk of yardage here. You're setting yourself up at the three-yard line. There's no way they're not going to have Montgomery go and plow through and get the touchdown that way. So they decided to go for the two-pointer, and it did not work out.
Goff looking out over that defense. There's the snap. Hands to Demo. He is submarined and taken down at the one. The Lions come up empty on the two-point conversion. Jalen Petrie, the nickelback. Good penetration that time. Cut down the back, and the Lions will stay down 10, 23-13.
I mean, granted, considering that it had just worked to get you the touchdown, I can't be mad at you for attempting to use basically the same play again, but it did not have quite the same effect the second time around. Did I mention Carlton Davis had him a game?
Stroud
yes, he did.
Fakes the give, boots to his right, being chased by Pascal. Wow. Now throws downfield. Right. It is up and
picked
up by the Lions.
Yes.
Intercepted by Carlton Davis, who ran under it. Stroud floated it up that time, and it just hung in the air long enough for Carlton Davis to make his second interception of the third quarter. Oh, baby, that is huge.
And now, while we have a lot over the course of the last few hutchless weeks here with the Lions, have complained a lot about, you know, your blitzes aren't getting home, guys aren't putting a whole lot of pressure on the QB. Even without Za'Darius Smith playing, though he was there on the sidelines, basically almost acted like another assistant coach. This week, the D-line wanted to prove me wrong in a big way, and did they ever take it away, Lee McNeil.
Stroud's got it, wants to throw from deep in the pocket, looking, gonna go down, sacked by Lee McNeil. Got him back inside the 15-yard line. 54 with a big-time rush that time.
And then Josh Pascal doing the same later on in the fourth.
On third and 10, he's got the football. Stroud back. Pressure comes. Stroud gets away from one man. Not the second man.
Yes.
Now he's going down.
Yes.
Sack back inside the 40-yard line. Ball is out. Houston's on top of it, but damage done. There's the shotgun snap.
Oh, yeah, you couldn't be really happier about the way that your defense responded. And I wasn't expecting to have multiple sacks in this game, to be entirely honest with you. It was rather shocking, but in a pleasant way, certainly. Six different defensive linemen got a QB hit on Sunday night, three of which ended up being sacks.
Did they ever say why Za'Darius Smith didn't play?
Well, this was supposed to be his bye week anyway.
Oh.
So they decided, well, here, go ahead and rest up, take your bye week, and I guess he went down. There was something, some sort of other matter he had to attend to. He was there at the game on Sunday night, but they figured, well, otherwise you're playing like 19 games this season or whatever the season is
anymore.
Sense. So I understand why they did it. He expressed disappointment about not being able to go, but not like in a totally just crappy way. He's like, I really wanted to be out there. And you saw he was kind of getting involved over the course of the game, like, looking at things and, kind of coaching guys a little bit.
Good.
So then from there, the comeback really truly begins. We start with Jahmyr Gibbs.
There's the shotgun snap to Goff. Back and looking. Floats it out to Gibbs. Gibbs has got a block. There he goes. 10, 15, 20. 25-yard line. Cuts it left at the 30. 35. Still going at the 40. And tackled from behind as he gets out to the 44-yard line. Beautiful call that time by Ben Johnson. Goff floated it perfectly to his running back, who picked up 33 yards on the play before he's tackled from behind by Jerry Hughes. It takes. Turns, throws right side, got a complete. Amon-Ra picks up a block to the five, to the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. They are right back in this game.
Yes. Panay Sewell getting down flat down the line of scrimmage. Man.
Big time stuff there, certainly from Amon-Ra St. Brown. And despite this not being a very good game for Jared Goff, especially in the first half, you really can't blame the wide receiver core there at all. Like, Amon-Ra did have that massive touchdown there, which made all the difference, and he had 38 yards on the night. And J-Mo, like I said, obviously the interception that was thrown in his direction. Dan Campbell blamed him for it, for not being at the right place. But he did have a huge part in this team finally breaking through that Texans defense ultimately. Now we get to the fourth quarter. Jake Bates ended up being kind of the star of this thing late, and he has a chance to tie it up here with a 58-yarder.
Patton the snap. There it is. Fox the spot. Kick away. It is up, and it is good. Yes, he got it. Oh. From 58, Jake Bates sends it through, and the Lions have come back to tie this game with 5:01 to go.
And the Lions once again have the chance to, Houston has the chance to even things up, and this is about where the pass interference call would have come into play
right
on this drive. But ultimately, they're forced to settle for a 58-yard field goal attempt of their own. It did not go well.
There's the snap. There's the spot. Kick away. It is up, and it is no good. Missed it to the left. Missed it to the left. It's still 23-23, and the Lions are going to get the ball just shy of midfield. They are in prime position to win this football game.
And keep in mind, at that point, all you really need to do here is get to within field goal range. Apparently, 58 yards is within field goal range for Jake Bates. But that's really all you needed to do to win this thing. You got prime position because of the missed field goal. But Amon-Ra St. Brown definitely helped that along a little bit.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Jared back and looking. Jared looking, throwing. Got Amon-Ra. First down inside the 40 and down to the 37-yard line. Goff delivers, 14 makes the catch, gain of 11, and Houston burns their final timeout.
Which sets up this. Jake Bates, game on the line, 52-yarder. You would have liked to see him get a little bit closer, but keep in mind he has already nailed one from 58 that night, earlier that quarter, in fact. So we're setting up for the game. Jake Bates. Dapper Dan Miller, take it away.
There's the snap, spot, kick away. It is up, and it is good. He got it. We're going to fly home on the wings of Jake Bates. Oh, baby. Good from 58. Good from 52. And that's good enough for a victory for the Detroit Lions. Oh, what a comeback by this team. 7 in a row. Down 16 at the break. They scored all the points in the second half. They are 8-1 on the season.
The just ridiculousness of that call really is just what makes it for me.
I love this call.
I mean, in Detroit,
we still have, I know that's great, we still have Mickey and Ken from the Red Wings, and we love them, but, oh, Dan Dickerson, I mean, come on.
But Dan Miller really
Dan Miller, yeah.
Absolutely just nailing it on that one.
Dan Miller. So, fantastic. And, yeah, another game won by a kicker.
And this one, you cannot really understate just how close that thing was to missing. Like, that went up.
I saw it.
I honestly thought we were going to overtime. It was so, like, that was within inches of not being good.
And when we were doing the picks on Friday, I had them go into overtime. I think I got the score right, though.
I think you did.
If it would have been overtime and 26-23, I'm like, yep, okay. I don't need to win any. I don't need to guess anything more correct. I got that one.
You take that and parade that victory lap around forever, and you know what? I wouldn't even blame you for it. I mean, it's hard not to right now feel confident, like supremely confident in this team's ability to make a deep playoff run this year, right? I mean, you're talking, you had none of your, defensively, you didn't have either of your edge rushers really just out there. I mean, you had Josh Pascal out there, but like, you didn't have your main acquisitions, Darius Smith, your trade deadline pickup there. You're still kind of playing depleted there a bit. You had Jared Goff play one of his worst games, or at least one of his worst first halves of his career in Detroit.
Yeah.
And you still, somehow, after all that, come away with a win against a Houston team that is absolutely a legitimate team, a legitimate playoff team. Like, this was truly just the statement, the signature win. I mean, Green Bay was nice in its own right, but this, being down by so much, being down 23-7 at the half and then finding a way to come back and pull off the win on the road against a very good playoff caliber team, that right there says more to me about this team than anything. Like that, this may be the defining moment of the year. Like this is a game that I thought, honestly, we could have chalked up as one of the few opportunities for an L the rest of the way of this season.
Yeah.
And instead, you're now looking at 8-1.
8-1.
I don't know that this has happened in my lifetime. I don't believe it has.
Well, they did set an NFL record. I don't remember all the stats, but being down so far and then coming back, I mean, they're setting records.
That's just kind of what this team does. Like, they just go out there, and when you think, no, there's no way they can seriously sustain this, right? And then they go, and they do that.
I saw a wonderful tweet, somebody in the know in the NFL, that said, does Detroit just shut down when the Lions play away? Because it seems like there's so many people in the stands, it's almost like everybody just leaves the city of Detroit to go see the Lions on the road.
It does seem like that. Like, and it happened again last night where they basically took over at Houston's stadium. Like, it was great. Like, the Lions fan base, that no one can say these people don't travel.
Now they're number one in the NFC. Isn't that great?
And I can't tell you right now a single team in the NFC that they couldn't beat in a playoff game. Not a one. Not a single one.
Right.
There's really only one team I even somewhat worry about in the AFC. Although, I mean, yeah, the Chiefs keep getting their own stupid brand of luck. Don't get me wrong. I'm not happy about it, but it is what it is. I am rather, I'm loving every bit of this. Like,
yes.
It feels like, does it not feel like at this point that this is just like the team of destiny, man?
Yeah. I've got my hopes up. It's official. My hopes are up.
Welcome to the party. That's all I could say there.
I'm not used to being here.
Neither are most of us. Like, a lot of us are first timers at this, Adam. It's understandable because we haven't had it for so long.
I want to see him win because then I'll have seen all four major sports win a championship, kind of like the Tigers. Do you remember that? Oh, that's right. You weren't alive.
I hate you. Have I mentioned that lately? That I hate you?
Have I mentioned lately that I hate you?
It would be so. Absolutely, just I would be ecstatic to see it happen, and I feel like you very much have a good chance, and you're going to want to do it this year, because I would say right now that both your coordinators are absolutely going to be
gone,
sought after. At least one of them will be gone. Like, I think Aaron Glenn will be a head coach in this league, and probably sooner rather than later.
Yep.
Part of me wonders if he's going to end up getting the opening in New Orleans that Dennis Allen vacated a couple weeks ago.
Just became available.
Like, I kind of wonder, like, if he's a guy that they're going to target for that position. Although, wouldn't it be hilarious that you just bring Allen up here to replace Glenn? I'd be fine with that.
Yeah.
Because the defenses under him during his tenure as defensive coordinator were really, really good. So, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to see that happen. Now, you kind of really just, I feel like you have to go all in, don't you? Like,
yes.
This year has to be it, because... Yeah, there's a chance you could bring most of the band back together next year. Certainly the players, if not the entirety of the coaching staff. But it just feels like it's your year. Like, everything we've seen from this team, the resilience when things are very, very much not going their way, like they were on Sunday night.
Yep.
They somehow find a way to be like, you know what? We can do this. There's absolutely no reason why we can't come back and do this. And then they go and do it every time.
Just the calm demeanor of Dan Campbell when Bates was kicking that 52-yard attempt. And he was just like, I know he's going to make it. I know he's going to make it. And it just as soon as it went through the uprights, he just kind of turned around to everybody and said, yep, I knew it.
Bates it's like is he my knew. Guy. He knew. Like, he just knew. Like, he had that total confidence that, yeah, he's going to do what we need him to do. He's going to pull this off somehow.
Yep. Got the game ball, too.
As well he should have. He's a big part of the reason you were even in a position to win. And then the guy who got you the win at the end of the day when that drive ultimately, well, I mean, you didn't really need but 3 points there to end the thing. Mm-hmm. But he's absolutely the biggest
isn't he
contributor.
I hear,
is he still perfect on the air?
Perfect on the air, yeah. That's what I was, yeah, I think he is.
Like, he still has not missed a field goal this season, and he now has two game winners on the year, too. Like, we are used to having that kind of production from our kickers here, certainly those of us who are around for the Jason Hansen and Matt Prater eras.
Yes.
But since Prater moved on, it has been, shall we say, a bit questionable. Like, we haven't at times had great or even good, acceptable kickers since then. And then Bates comes out from, you know, the USFL, and all of a sudden turns into just Mr. Perfect. I don't know how it happened, but it did. And I love it. 110% here for it.
Yeah.
From here, honestly, is there really any game that you can look at with this team and say that this is absolutely, like, this has a good chance to be a loss? Because I'll be honest with you right now, I can't. I really can't. I mean, you can make the argument for Buffalo. You can make the argument for San Fran in San Fran, but right now, I feel like you can absolutely take on anybody in the National Football League, and you stand a very, very good chance of coming away with the W. Like, this was the one I thought they'd blow, and to their everlasting credit, they did not.
Yep.
We've got to hit a break. It's happy hour at Solid State Radio. All right, so we do have to. I know you don't want to talk about Michigan football.
Is that still a thing?
It is still a thing in
bless their heart.
It was quite something.
Yeah, it was a 20-15. They actually scored 15. Last time I checked out, I think they maybe had three on the board.
I'll be honest, I didn't expect you to win that game. I don't think anyone expected you to win that game, but you really did amazingly, like, come shockingly close to winning that game.
They showed some fight. They really did.
You did. Now, the problem is, it seems like when Michigan was actually able to get in the red zone and get in real scoring range, they don't seem to know what exactly to do once they get there. Like, there were three times during that game that the Wolverines got down to their opponent's 3-yard line. And of those three times, care to guess how many of them resulted in a touchdown?
Out of three attempts? Zero.
Actually, one.
One. No kidding.
But that's basically where that game was decided. And the problem is, it seems like whenever they do get that close, I mean, obviously the Lions knew what to do when they got down there, and that is just plow Montgomery through everybody and just be done with it. But the problem is, Michigan, like, the running up the gut thing was not working. At one point, they had Alex Orji keep the ball and run it because Alex Orji, as we've established, cannot throw. And there is at least somewhat a good offensive coordinator and a good head coach should have something better than that dialed up, because everyone knows when Orji has the ball, they know he's not going to try and throw in that scenario. Like, you know, you're setting yourself up for him to keep the ball and run it. And Indiana had your number, all but the one time there. But for me, that game, watching that last drive in which Sherrone Moore just let 28 seconds run off the clock for no apparent reason before actually calling a timeout. That was absolutely beautiful. Just absolutely hilarious. I couldn't believe what I was watching, to be perfectly honest with you. Like, okay, I get if you're going to wait on having to burn the timeout because if they get another first down, which Indiana did on the next play, game's basically over. But if you do actually make stop the clock there, you have a chance. Instead, you basically let them waste that time, run it off the clock, and don't give them the chance to come back. Not smart. No. Like, I'm starting to really think Sherrone Moore is just not ready for primetime. And I really thought that he was going to be, like, the next up-and-coming, coach prospect.
Well, when
but some of the decision making here shows he's just not ready.
Yeah, well, last season, I mean, when Captain Khaki Pants was not allowed to be there more, he did a good job. But this was a different team. They still had the teachings of Captain Khaki Pants, but now he doesn't have any of that. He's on his own, and I think you're right. He's not ready for this. I think he's overwhelmed.
Oh, I totally understand that. Like. And it shows that that's the case, but, I mean, you had to be somewhat prepared for the, knowing that this is how things were going to go down, knowing that you didn't have a ready QB really in the pipeline, knowing that obviously Harbaugh is going to be bailing and everything that went down the way it did. I will give credit where credit is due, though, to Wink Martindale, your defensive coordinator, for managing to hold the Hoosiers as close in the score as he did. Like, the defensive game plan was surprisingly sound, you know, despite the pieces you were missing. There is some serious NFL-caliber talent in that defense, without question.
Yeah.
But just offensively, you've not been able to put it together. And that's kind of a problem. I mean, with your O-line, okay, we can chalk some of that up to injury, certainly, and it meant that Davis Warren didn't get a lot of protection in the pocket. But it also, unfortunately, meant that your run game was not as strong as it otherwise could have been.
Sure.
So I can at least give you that. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it comes down to your offensive coordinator is garbage. Kirk Campbell needs to be fired out of a cannon immediately. And also, you just don't have the QBs for the system that you want, whatever that even is at this point. Davis Warren only completed about half his passes, and Orgy ended up losing a fumble when Wolverines were driving to, on their way to score in the second quarter. It's just, everything about it is just kind of a mess, honestly, and I don't know if... I'm not sure if you've really got anybody in the pipeline at this point that is going to be the guy to step up. You literally had Jack Tuttle retire in the middle of the season. You've got two guys who clearly do not have the ability to get it done, and one who you know when he comes in, you know exactly why he's there. You know there's one thing that Alex Orgy is coming in to do, and that's to run the football. And you know other teams can scheme for that pretty easily when they know your QB can't throw. And when they know your other QB also can't throw half the time, that doesn't help matters any. But at some point, your OC has to be able to develop, to scheme some kind of game plan under which two guys like that can at least have a shot at success, and Kirk Campbell's failed to do that.
I think in the offseason, the AD for University of Michigan has a lot of long walks in the woods ahead of him to really think about what he needs to do with this program.
No, without a doubt, man. It's become readily apparent that is the case, and like something's got to be done. Like you're going to lose even more talent this offseason. Like like that vaunted defense here is going to be losing some key guys coming up in this offseason.
Yes, sir.
And that's going to be even more concerning. Then you're really going to find yourself in a really rough spot next year. I just, like, this can't go on like this, right? Like, someone has to be the adult in the room and, you know, step up and make whatever changes, you know, step up the recruiting, whatever it is that needs to be done.
I would hope so.
Because right now nothing's working, and you're honestly in a position where you're going to be lucky to make a... to make a bowl game.
I think that's a pipe dream.
Well, not necessarily, because you do have coming up this week Northwestern. And Northwestern is soundly mediocre. No, sorry, my apologies. Not this week, but you do have them coming up after. No, this week you are not playing. The week after, when you come back from your... when you're by, you have to take on Northwestern. They're your best shot at this point of getting...
I thought Michigan already had their bye. This is weird.
Nope. So Northwestern next week, and then... Well, yeah, because I believe that both teams were... Michigan and Michigan State have had a bye. There must be a second one baked in the schedule now or something. But you're looking at... you need 6 wins to be bowl eligible. That's just kind of the long and short of it. And Northwestern is not a particularly strong team. Their QB at least has a positive touchdown to interception ratio, but not by much.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like you should be able to get this win. I don't think Northwestern will necessarily have an answer for Khalil Mullings. Like, you should be able to, you know, establish the run a little bit more, but that's your only hope, because after that, you've got Ohio State, and that is
dead man walking.
Yeah. They're going to be coming in most likely, you know, 10-1 at that point. I don't like your odds.
No.
So you need next week badly. Otherwise, you're seriously looking at one of the most probably historic collapse, not counting LSU in the COVID year, because it was the COVID year. You didn't even play a full schedule, and you didn't have half your players in any given week. That was a weird time that I am willing to write off completely, which, you know.
Yeah, you really can't blame LSU for that. This one, I don't even think you could really blame U of M. It's not really a collapse. It's an abandonment. You lost a lot of cogs in that machine.
Right. You lost a lot of your key recruiters and coaches. You lost, obviously, a lot of, I mean, there was a lot of attrition to the NFL. I understand that.
You know what this reminds me of? Is when Bo and Luke left Dukes of Hazzard, we were left with Coy and Vance.
You know, I don't hate that. I don't hate that comparison. It's not terrible, honestly. And I will give you full props for that, sir. But I mean, just looking at going into next year, what is realistically, like, you look at the draft board, Mason Graham and Will Johnson are expected to be top. Like, looking at Tankathon, like, their big board, and I trust them when it comes to their evaluations of college talent. Two of your major defensive components, Mason Graham and Will Johnson, are expected to be taken second and third overall, or like they're ranked that highly on the big board. You've got Kenneth Grant, Colston Loveland is projected to go first round even. Like, you're going to be missing a lot of big names next season. And losing Loveland is going to be just catastrophic to your offense, who already can't seem to get their you-know-what together. Like, looking at just, like, that's just in the first round, dude.
Yeah.
Like, something has to happen. Like, some real recruiting's going to have to be done here to replace what you've lost. And, you know, you're really going to have to embrace the old transfer portal. I know a lot of coaches are not very, shall we say, receptive to playing the game the way it is now. But, you know, that's the name of the game in 2024, man. Like, you can't go out there and decry, like, oh my God, that players can just leave at any time, and they're choosing money over playing with, like, you know, like coaches have been doing for literal decades. I don't see the issue. Like, you have to play that game, and yeah. You're really going to have to do that, I think, this offseason if you want to, you know, not kind of fade into also-ran status in the Big Ten for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes. I mean, you're talking to a guy who normally roots for a program that is very much an also-ran status at present, and it only got worse once we started bringing teams from the West Coast into mm-hmm. this conference.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it. Now, I mean, mm-hmm. it certainly put most everyone else on a level playing field, because now it's like, Oregon's everybody's daddy, at least for the near future. It's nice to at least see
I'm
him
the
put the
bu-
It was nice to at least see him put the Buckeyes in their place. Don't get me wrong. I am absolutely okay with that component of it.
Yeah.
But it really did just kind of like put all of us down in this kind of sad state where, well, our conference is being taken legitimately, but our teams aren't. Anyway, we're about up against it. It is happy hour at your local alternative, Solid State Radio. So by now, you kind of know how this goes here on Mondays. Like, there are things that happen in the NFL that have absolutely nothing to do with your Detroit Football Lions, even though they are, you know, in our hearts, the center of the football universe.
Yeah.
Other things happen around the NFL. People overreact to them, and we tell you what's fact and what's just a load of crap. Let's dive right into this, do some overreactions or overreaction to reality. Maestro, the music, please.
There we go.
Yeah.
Hit those orchestra beats.
Feels like football,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, it does. The frozen tundra of Solid State Radio.
Something.
All right, overreaction or reality? We start with Christian McCaffrey. Is he going to save the 49ers season?
No, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, obviously he just came back on Sunday, and they didn't exactly ease him back into things by any means. He had like 13 of the team's running back carries of a total of 15, but he didn't do he didn't gain a whole lot of yardage against the Bucs. He added 68 yards on 6 catches. And it really, there's no doubt that the Niners are a better team when him and Debo are at full strength. No argument about that. But the Niners, I don't know if it's going to make a big difference at the end of the day, because this isn't a team that is as strong on defense as it has been. Brandon Ayuk's done for the year, and he was a big part, a key component, really, of their success last season. And there's a lot of issues with the offensive line. Like, Trent Williams and the rest of it's held together by duct tape and chewing gum. So, really, anyone gets hurt, all of a sudden your offense just goes back to being rather, shall we say, mid. Like, you needed a last-second field goal to win against the Bucs this week. Like, the division hasn't run away from you, and that's really the only thing keeping you in this, honestly. Like, this isn't the same Niners team that we saw last year. I don't think McCaffrey coming back, I mean, it can only help them, but I don't think it's the difference between them making a playoff run and not. I don't think that's going to happen regardless this season.
Let's talk about the G-men. The Giants need to replace Daniel Jones with Drew Lock for the rest of the season.
I mean, what could it hurt at this point, right? I don't see any way that Danny Dimes is the guy going forward for the G-men. The Giants are sitting at 2-8, and you ended up losing to the Panthers. Really? The Panthers. I mean, arguably, Brian Daboll should be fired at this point, because if you lose to the Panthers, I believe that's how that's supposed to go. New Orleans got the memo. You apparently did not. So something's got to change, because you know when you've lost to a team that has completely and utterly given up, which Carolina has, that really a major change has to be forthcoming. And if you move on from Jones this offseason, there's $22 million in dead money for next year. He had 2 years left on the contract, but none of that is guaranteed unless he gets hurt. And so if that's the case, if Jones does suffer an injury, the Giants are on the hook for that $23 million. So realistically, the smart financial thing to do here would be bench him, let him go this offseason, put Drew Lock or whoever in, because your season's already shot. Not that I think that Drew Lock is actually going to... I don't think Drew Lock's going to make a difference. Like, if we're talking from a improving the team standpoint in the present, I would say it's an overreaction, because, no, Drew Lock's not going to come in here and do markedly better than Jones has. But given the financial considerations, yes, it's time for Danny Dimes to be done.
So this one, this overreaction I have in the hopper. I still don't like it, because I don't agree with it at all.
Okay.
But here we go. Lamar Jackson is about to win his third MVP award.
You can make it, honestly, you can make an argument that he's playing better this year than he did last year when he won the MVP the second time. He's already matched his total touchdown passes from last year, and we're, you know, a little over halfway through the season. And he's on pace right now to throw more touchdown passes this season than the year when he won his first MVP. There's a strong argument to be had.
But I want Bates.
Well, I hate to tell you, it ain't going to be Bates. I mean, there's just no way to argue that Jackson is not the front runner for this thing right now. Like, he has been doing everything that this team needs him to do. And he's been, I don't think you can argue that there's been any one guy who has been more crucial to his team than Lamar Jackson has to the Ravens. I mean, look at the guys who are currently, like, Lamar Jackson's the betting favorite over at DraftDuel or FanKings or one of those.
Right. One of those.
Josh Allen is, like, the next guy, and you can argue that he is very much crucial to the success there, but as much as Lamar, I would say no. Pat Mahomes certainly hasn't been as much, so if anything, he's not looked like the Pat Mahomes of old. He's not the reason that team's unbeaten so far. That's almost entirely on your defense.
Yeah.
Who else are you going to argue? I mean, I know a lot of people in Detroit would argue Jared Goff, and there's probably people in Washington that would argue Jaden Daniels there, and he's definitely, I feel, going to get the consolation prize of Rookie of the Year. But I don't truly believe right now you can argue that there's any one guy who is more important to his team in the NFL than Lamar is to the Ravens. Just statistically, there's no way around it. He's the biggest reason why that team is doing what they're doing.
I know you don't really want to rag on the Cowboys.
Oh, no. So, me, never.
No. So, okay. I'm going to ask you to come out of your comfort zone for this one. The Cowboys should trade Parsons this offseason.
I think, honestly, you have to re-sign him. Like, you can't... Like, you're not going to get back in return what you would, you know, what you would get from him. I really truly don't think. I mean, obviously, this is a team that is probably in dire need of a rebuild. But, like, Micah Parsons is going to be there's not a lot of guys that can step in and do what he does. Even if you have those extra, like, two or three first round picks, whatever. And I feel like you have to, if you're not getting at least three first rounders plus something, it's probably not worth it for you to trade him. Like, you just have to. The problem is that also, like, getting those draft picks, that also depends on Jerry Jones hitting on those picks in the draft. Remember, he is the guy who is in charge of all football decisions in Dallas. Yeah. And do you trust 82-year-old Jerry Jones to get it right on three first-round picks when we at least know that you got one very, very right in Micah Parsons?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Like, the upside here, like, you have CeeDee Lamb for quite some time. You've got Parsons for a long time at that point if you go and re-sign him. And I know a lot of people think Dak Prescott's washed, that he's not going to be the guy. And I think the rumors of his demise are going to prove to ultimately be greatly over-exaggerated. Like, you're not trying to acquire, like, you don't need those franchise guys. You do, whether or not you think Dak Prescott is or isn't, he is a franchise QB.
Oh, yeah. Yes, he is.
And CeeDee Lamb is the kind of wide receiver that teams dream about.
Oh, yeah.
And Parsons is the kind of edge rusher that every team wants. Honestly, I know that Jerry's not going to sell on him, but I, you know, wouldn't hate seeing him in Honolulu Blue, man. But realistically, if Dallas is smart, you're going to stay the course with those three guys, because this is the sort of thing you would do if you didn't. If Dak wasn't there, it was just Cooper Rush or something, and you need to get a franchise QB, then, you know, we could talk about it. But with the team structured as they are right now, no. I would say it's absolutely not a smart move, so overreaction, absolutely, without a doubt.
Let's go over to Pittsburgh for this one. And I don't like this one at all, but I want to see what you think. Is this an overreaction, or is this an actuality? Mike Tomlin should be coach of the year.
Dan Campbell, 120%.
130%.
Like, Dan Campbell, in my mind, and I'm not just saying this as a homer, I'm not just sitting here drinking the Honolulu Blue Kool-Aid, a little early in the day to start that, but I absolutely 110% believe Dan Campbell should be your favorite for coach of the year.
Well, the way he pushes his team, not even like an aggressive way, he's basically saying, you can do it. We're going to do it. Let's do it. I mean, the whole grit thing and just the calmness on him.
Right. It's like the combination of that calmness and also the willingness to go for it and be aggressive about it when it makes sense to you, and honestly, sometimes when it doesn't make sense to you. But that being said,
yeah,
Tomlin has to be a close second. Look what he's managed to do with, like, with Russell Wilson and Justin Fields as
his
QB.
We all thought Russell Wilson was done.
I think a lot of people thought Russ was cooked. You know, we went from let Russ cook to Russ is cooked after he ended up in Pittsburgh. And look at you now. Currently, you are leading the AFC North over the team that has the current favorite for MVP. Like, you took, you know, in any other scenario, if you have two QBs, you don't have a QB. And somehow, Tomlin has managed to get the best out of these guys. And there's so many moves that have really been just, you know, some well just done plays. The defense has been very good. And the offense has really just kind of been thrown together in a way that I don't think a lot of people expected to go well, especially with the first-year OC in Arthur Smith, the former Falcons coach. Outside of George Pickens, it's not like the wide receiver room is particularly deep here. Your O-line has been, you know, pretty banged up. Like, I think Tomlin deserves a lot of credit for what he's done.
Yes,
but for me, it's still Dan Campbell.
Dan Campbell. I got some more overreactions. Do you need a breather?
Nah, bring it.
All right.
Let's get right. Let's keep going.
All right.
I'm on a roll today, man.
All right. Let's go. Best team in the AFC isn't the Chiefs. Is that an overreaction or is that reality?
I've been saying it quite a bit on this show in the last few weeks. No, KC is not the best team in the division. I mean, yes, by statistically, by the record, they are, but this is a team that I don't understand how they continue to win football games. I really don't. Like you got lucky somehow that the Broncos of all teams,
yeah,
had their kicker miss a 35-yard field goal. Bates would have made that one. Like, you managed to block the kick, and you end up going to 9-0. Like, this team, you'll never convince me, like, that this team is as good as the record indicates. They just aren't. I can't buy it. I still feel like the Ravens are the team to beat ultimately in the AFC. I know they've got who's got more losses here. I understand, but I have a hard time believing that this luck is just going to continue on. They're not seriously going to go undefeated. Not with things looking on offense as rough as they have. I mean, Mahomes didn't manage to not have a turnover on Sunday. Look at you go.
Hey.
Ooh, a whole game without a pick. I'll be damned.
Because he's got Taylor Swift on his side.
Oh, good Lord. Like, beat the Bills next week, and I can be okay with this, but to come that close to losing to the Broncos and to get kind of lucky to not have escaped at a 8-1 record.
Super Bowl hangover, maybe? Question mark?
Maybe, but so far it doesn't seem to be showing in the standings.
That's true. Commanders lost the NFC East with their loss to the Steelers. Is that an overreaction or reality?
That's absolutely ridiculous. They haven't lost anything yet because there's only one team that's gunning for them in that division, quite frankly, and that's Philly, and those two teams are going to play twice in like the next 6 weeks.
That's going to be some good watching.
That is going to be that's going to be a big one.
I'm calling right now. They split.
Like, you could win. The Eagles could gain two games on the Commanders here, where they in 5 days with a win on Thursday, and ultimately lead the NFC East by two games. But that hasn't happened yet. Like, these two teams haven't faced each other. Let's wait until we actually see them head to head before we start writing the book on the Commanders. Overreaction.
All right. We move to the Vikings.
Okay.
Minnesota Vikings need to worry about Darnold rest of the way. Is that a reality or is that an overreaction?
I mean, the turnovers have gone up significantly since that out-of-nowhere 5-0 start to the season. Like, he's now thrown six picks in these last four games, whereas he's thrown six touchdown passes. He's still completing a good percentage of his passes, but it just doesn't look like... Like, the mistakes are really starting to show up, and it's starting to look like the Sam Darnold that I thought you were going to get when he ended up kind of getting thrust into the starter's role in Minnesota. I mean, you've won the last two games, but you've thrown five picks in doing so. Like, they're still winning in spite of this, but this isn't a team that I think can make a particularly deep playoff run if they don't manage to get Darnold back on track. Like, I don't think they're an NFC title contender as of right now anyway.
Yeah.
I don't see that being the case at all, but this could be the difference between just making it in the wild card and getting blown out early in the playoffs and at least winning a game. Or, you know, they're not. I don't think they're going to earn a bye. That's not within the realm of possibility. Lions are taking this division.
Yeah.
But this is going to be the difference, is getting Darnold back on track. If they can do it, then, you know, maybe this team can win a playoff game or two.
Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate. The six interceptions, could that possibly be on the blame of the receivers? Like we saw.
No, these are pretty well on.
That's all on Sam Darnold.
In very large part. Like, he's got a passer rating of 94.5 in those last two starts. Like, it did, like, all the peripherals would seem to indicate that it's just he's not, like, he's making some mistakes. Like I said, more accurate than a lot of guys. That completion percentage ain't for nothing. But, you know, you do kind of have to watch these things, man.
Cowboys McCarthy will be the next head coach fired.
You know, I do think he's gonna get sacked before the end of the season. But I think, if we're to be honest here, Matt Eberflus is probably a more likely guy to get fired. I mean, you look at how things have gone since he took over. We've proven he didn't do very well with Justin Fields, wasn't able to use him, whereas Mike Tomlin has been able to, was able to use him early on to get the Steelers into contention. And now, even with Caleb Williams, who it seems like really could be the real deal here. Like,
yeah,
the record obviously doesn't tell a lot of good, but he's got 9 touchdowns to 5 picks. Like, he's looked like he is at least a legitimate NFL quarterback in his rookie year. But I think you've had enough different looks with him to think that, okay, it's time to move on. When Jerry says he's not getting fired, McCarthy's not getting fired immediately, I do at least somewhat tend to believe him, if only because, I mean, at this point, it's not his fault that that Dak's done for the foreseeable future. It's not really his fault with Dak Prescott being out for the rest of the season. And we talked about in fact, it's been so much talked about how little Jerry Jones did to this team in the offseason to addressed the glaring issues that were known to be there.
Glaring.
That he literally threatened to fire the guys who do his weekly coaches show on the team's flagship station because they called him out for that exact thing.
Yep.
It's well known that the problems with this team, like, is Mike McCarthy the guy to turn things around? No, more than likely not. Is he the reason that the Cowboys are in the spot that they are in? By and large, no. Does that mean he's not going to be the sacrificial lamb between now and the end of the season? Also, does not necessarily mean that he won't be. No. So I think he will be fired. I think Matt Eberflus is getting blown out first.
We're going to continue the conversation for MVP. Jalen Hurts deserves to be MVP.
You can honestly argue that one of his teammates deserves it more. And you know who I'm talking about. Saquon Barkley. You could make a very good argument that he is somewhat more deserving of being included in that talk than Jalen Hurts is, but it's fair to, he's making a strong case for it. So he had 2 passing touchdowns, 2 rushing touchdowns on Sunday. And in the last 5 weeks, he's been really good. Like, he's completing something like 71% of his passes with like 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns, and 8 pick since week 6. That's pretty impressive. On top of the 8 touchdowns he's run in during that stretch. Obviously, Lamar is the guy. Like Lamar Jackson is absolutely your MVP until proven otherwise. But
Jared Goff.
You know, you would think that, but also you can't go out there and do things like throw 5 picks and be in that kind of... He is admittedly in the conversation, yeah. But I would say right now Hurts is doing a lot more to help his team. Like, not that Goff is replaceable by any means. He just hasn't been asked to do as much. Whereas Jalen Hurts has been asked to do a lot recently, and he has proven that he can do it. So I would put him, honestly, I'd put him probably over Mahomes in the MVP conversation.
Mahomes is not having a good year. We've established that. He did good
yesterday. He did better. He's starting to find his stride again. But right now, I'd move Hurts up in the rankings. But Lamar is still my guy.
There you go. Sunday's win over Buccaneers saved the 49ers season. Is that a reality or is that overreaction?
No, it absolutely is. Like that's 110% the truth. Like the NFC West is still very much up for grabs. Like the Rams, as of right now, are at 500. The Seahawks are a game below, and the Cardinals have a win over the Niners right now. As a at least have a hefty start on the tiebreaker there, and San Fran has to face Seattle, Green Bay, and Buffalo coming up. Like, this is absolutely a game that had to, like, they needed that win. Without a doubt, this is what is keeping them in any way in contention for the NFC West, I would say. We probably have time for, one more?
Sure. How about Colts made mistake benching Anthony Richardson?
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I mean, I'm still not convinced Richardson is necessarily going to come back for the Colts. Like, I don't think they're going to see him as their franchise guy going forward. And it probably would help Richardson, honestly, to sit and learn for a bit. Like, he wasn't ready to be pushed in, I don't think, when he was. And it seems like we've come across quite a few QBs lately that would have benefited from the Jordan Love approach of kind of sitting on the bench and watching somebody else work. I don't think keeping Richardson in there to struggle after, especially when I think he's already kind of lost the clubhouse there.
Yeah.
I will say I do think that is an overreaction, because his confidence is basically shot. He's lost the clubhouse. What good was it going to do of keeping him out there and throwing him out to the wolves essentially every week? What are you going to do? Make sure that he's never able to be confident and competent for another team ever?
Right.
I don't think any good served from that. There's your overreactions. We'll come back and close things out next.
That's it. It's over.
Jack Daniels!
Have a whole lot of time left in the show, but you had started telling me something kind of interesting off the air about
Christmas
your
music is happening. Everybody's putting up
everybody's
putting up decorations.
Not on Solid State, not on WMIC.
No, but everywhere else. Christmas music, Christmas decorations. We're all starting to think about Christmas already. And I have such a frustrating time with my woman, my lovely wife, who I love so much.
she's been the first person on the apology list this week, I see.
She is. I love her, but she's been wanting a Nintendo Switch for so long. I'm like, I'm going to get her one for Christmas. I got a team. I have a team looking for like the best price of these things. And she's like, hey, I'm just gonna go ahead and buy one for the family for Christmas. Won't that be great? I'm like, then I have to be that guy. Like, I was gonna buy you one for Christmas. Why would you do that?
Because that's exactly what she did.
Yeah.
Lovely. That's always fun.
I am a terrible gift giver. So if you like, give me something right over the plate, I'm like, I'm writing it down. I will
hit this out of the park.
See, now you're lucky. Your wife will actually give you a list.
Like an itemized list, literally with what she wants, where you can get it from, and how much it is. Like, it's very... like, she already...
A QR code with each one.
It's really impressive, but here's the thing. I love that better than having to guess at what she wants. And the nice thing is, like, if I don't end up getting all of the stuff for Christmas, and let me tell you, she ain't getting all the stuff for Christmas because she usually likes Lego sets and things. And I don't know if you're aware of this. Lego sets are expensive. And on a radio DJ salary, I ain't bringing home a bunch of those.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I know firsthand that Lego sets,
are not cheap.
Who do they think they're selling it to? But yeah, anyway,
adults.
Go ahead.
That's why. Because these aren't for kids anymore. Like these are like teen to like adult projects anymore.
There's like ones with like Christmas wreaths made of Legos. It's like. There's no, here you go, 5-year-old. I got you a wreath of Legos.
Like, then you have our house where, like, 90% of the things in our house are actually made of Legos. Like, there's a little guitar and an amp on a countertop that's Legos. We have the
Nintendo
Ghostbusters,
set.
Ghostmobile. Yeah. That is Ecto-1.
Ecto-1. Show some respect.
That is all Legos. Oh, our couch is Legos. Awesome. Our TV is made of Legos. Rachel herself might actually be made of Legos. We're not entirely sure on this.
But you know what?
But like, I'm pretty sure, like you, like the detail they put into the Ecto-1 is seriously like more than it would be for an actual vehicle.
Ecto-1.
Like she can now actually assemble, like put together and tear apart a car. Now it's amazing.
She knows a carburetor. But you know what? You see her list, and then you get some stuff off her list, but then you have to have that one gift that just deviates just a little bit.
And I've gotten fairly okay at doing that. Yeah. We gotta go. Stick around a full hour of local original music or whatever. It is you do at 6 o'clock. Either way, it's up next at your local alternative Solid State Radio on a little show we like to call Sessions. All being well, talk to you tomorrow afternoon at 3. See ya.